Welcome into a very special edition of the Locked On Knicks podcast, Alex, where we're going to be joined by one of our all-time favorite guests. He's only been on once, but I think we really hit it off with him this time again. Great dude, and even more talented as a writer, Mike Vorkunov of The Athletic. And we are getting into the coaching search, Alex.
Yeah, so we decided to break this into two parts, make it a little more digestible. But in our first episode today, we talk about Tom Thibodeau. And also just kind of the general vibe around this Knicks coaching search, how it compares to 2018, how Mike has kind of gauged Leon Rose's tenure so far, despite, you know, he hasn't been available for the media yet to actually talk. But, you know, just based off how his actions are coming across and things of that nature. So we'll get into that next on Locked On Knicks.
You are Locked On Knicks, your daily New York Knicks podcast. Part of the Locked On Podcast Network. Your team every day.
This is all rebound. Back up off the glass. It's good. RJ brings the Knicks to the
win. What he does is contagious.
Robinson with a catch and slam. Across the lane. Knox foul from behind. Count it and one to Trier. Trier drives down.
Becomes infectious.
You are Locked On Knicks. Today's episode is brought to you by Built Bar. Built Bar is a protein bar that tastes like a candy bar. Go to BuiltBar.com and use promo code LOCKEDON and you'll get $10 off your first order. Alex, coming off a great episode earlier this week with Spencer Perlman on the draft. We got another stud in the virtual studio. It's Mike Vorkunov, staff writer at The Athletic. Mike, thank you so much for joining us. I feel like you've been on every Knicks podcast. You've talked about every possible coaching candidate. You've written these incredibly intricate, really well done profiles on each potential candidate. Are you tired of talking about Knicks coaches yet? Are you still in this? It seems like there's new candidates emerging every single day now.
I mean, I'm just worried I'm not going to live up to Spencer Perlman. I don't see how I could possibly match that.
He's good. I think the brilliance of Spencer is that, like, he doesn't get too fired up about anything. He's so, like, he's very, very clinical, very to the point. It was great. It was a real experience. But I'm confident you can do it. We kind of wanted to get started just talking about this in sort of a big picture sense. Obviously, like, every coach the Knicks have had post Mike Woodson has sort of been a disaster to some degree or another. And Alex, I think, made a really good point when we were talking about this pre-show and saying, like, look, like, you can talk about process all you want and, like, yeah, how it's obviously better to cast a wide net and interview a lot of candidates. But the Knicks did do something kind of similar in 2018 where they had this really extended, lengthy process. And obviously that culminated in David Fizdale, and that didn't have a great end result. What's your feel just for the process, for lack of a better term, this time around, and how Leon Rose is going about this?
I mean, look, I think they're up to 8 as of the moment that we're taping this, candidates that they intend to interview. I've heard that it might get up to as many as like 10, somewhere around there. So that seems to be kind of, a well-rounded interview list, I guess. Some of the people on the list are kind of up-and-coming coaching candidates. Some are more established. I guess the question would be how much weight the other candidates get. I think it's fair to say right now that, like, Tom Thibodeau is a front runner at this point, at least from everything I've heard. And so I can't answer that right now, but, like, you know, if they really dig into, like, Kenny Atkinson or Ime Udoka or someone like that and really, really give them full appreciation during the head coaching search, then I think it becomes a pretty good thing for the Knicks. And the fact that they're doing their homework, they're looking at a lot of people, they're taking their time. And if the process is good, that has a better chance of the eventual candidate that they choose, you know, coming out in a good spot, I think.
Do you think there's any chance that, because some of these names that I'm seeing pop up are, you know, I mean, everybody's got to come from somewhere, you know what I mean? But by comparison to, like, Tibbs, Atkinson, even Miller, who, you know, managed to, you know, have some incumbency with the team, you know, right now, I just wonder if some of these names are almost being interviewed for head coach technically, but if maybe, do you think maybe there's a chance they're looking at some of these people as potential lead assistants as well? Like the guys like the Pat Delaney's and the Will Hardy's of the coaching search here.
Maybe. I wouldn't be surprised. Maybe they're trying to, you know, like, it could be all the above. They could be looking at guys potentially to see if they could be like a lead assistant, like a Mike Woodson, right? I think Pat Delaney almost got an assistant job with David Fizzo in 2018. Part of it might be just kind of also doing due diligence on some of them in case there's another coaching search or something like that, you know? You just kind of want to find out more about guys. And even if they might not be like the top, top candidate at the moment, what if someone surprises you and you're like, you're really impressed? Like, what if, you know, Will Hardy, you go through the interview process and like, he's only 32, he's only been in San Antonio, but you know, like he blows them away or something like that, or Pat Delaney, or I don't know. So if it's an open-minded process, I think talking to them could, you know, be a good thing for the Knicks, could be a good thing for Leon Rose. And then maybe somewhere along the lines, like could a, you know, could maybe like Chris Fleming eventually become like a lead assistant candidate? Who knows? I don't know. But yeah, I think there's a lot of utilities in doing a wide search like that.
This is sort of an unfair question because as far as I can tell, he hasn't really talked to the media yet. But what's your feel for Leon Rose so far? I guess just based on his hires and how meticulous he's seemingly been with everything. And I guess just in terms of how good of a job he's done and also what you feel like he'll prioritize in a coach.
Didn't you just preface that with saying that he hasn't even talked yet?
Yeah. Uh-huh. I thought that was, I just wanted to give context to everyone and for you.
You know, I by all indications, at least with the front office hires, they seem to be well-reviewed. Walt Perrin, everyone thinks, did a pretty good job in Utah. Obviously, the draft record speaks for itself, you know, with Rudy Gobert, Donovan Mitchell. He had some success last decade, too, when Kevin O'Connor was there. So, you know, Brock Aller, people seem to like, and that was kind of more of an obscure pick, I would think, compared to the others. Frank Zanin, heard good things, you know, worked for a good organization with the Thunder. We'll see what happens with the coaching search, but, I think what's interesting is that Leon, at least my read of it, seems to be kind of utilizing the contacts that he made over the years and picking people out from across the league rather than like one narrow lane of, you know, an organizational tree or executive or coaching tree or something like that. It seems to be a little more varied, which is good, like to get a varied set of backgrounds, I guess, into the franchise and the front office and not like one particular dogma, I'd say.
Yeah, I think it's pretty clear from the way that he's hiring that. I mean, I know like when he first got hired, Gavin and I went on the show and we were kind of worried, you know, based off the fact that he was only an agent, you know, it's like, oh, well, you know, if he's going to be in charge, I'm sure that he knows basketball in some way, but he's going to have to surround himself with a lot of really good basketball minds. And I think it's pretty safe to say, like, so far, at least on the surface, and you can only start judging this once they start really making moves and stuff. But on the surface, to me, at least, it seems like he prioritized getting like very strong basketball, you know, NBA people that have been around the league for a while, but also some up and comers. Like it seems like a pretty good mix to me. As far as the coaching process, you know, I actually think that so far, I think people, you know, I've seen so many like tweets and whatever from people today being like, wow, look at how thorough the Knicks are being. It's so un-Knicksy of them. But I think people forget that they were actually extremely thorough in their 2018 search that landed them David Fizdale as well. Is there anything that you've heard as far as difference in approach to this coaching search versus when they went after Fizdale in 2018, where Fiz, I don't think he was necessarily the front runner, but he was considered kind of a favorite from the start. And then there was of course talk about Budenholzer, but I don't know for sure that he would have ever come to the Knicks with Milwaukee on the table. You know, and there's a number of other candidates, even some that are surfacing again in this coaching search. Do you think there's any like difference in their approach this time around?
You know, that I think they ended up interviewing 11 people in 2018, if I remember right.
And they were even catching some heat from people saying like, oh, this is taking too long. You know, it's like, what are they waiting for? And the Knicks just kind of kept interviewing one more coach than another, and then finally settled on Fizdale.
Yeah, I mean, the time aspect of it to me is always kind of like, unless there's an urgent need to get a coach in by, you know, like the start of a season or something, I find that to not always be like a commanding argument for how long something is taking, especially now, you know, they have, I don't even know how long until, you know, like the draft, right? It does look that one was pretty thorough. From what I remember and what I understand, I think David Blatt and David Fizdale were kind of like the front runners early on, and I think that's kind of where it landed and ended up too, if I remember right, as the final candidates. And so we'll see. But I think I don't think the 2018 search was like flawed in some huge dramatic way, and it doesn't seem like this one is either. I think maybe just kind of, I don't know if it's fair to draw parallels between the two things, because I think maybe at the time the Knicks were looking for something different than they are now. And I think all coaching searches, to me at least, should be like kind of like performed in a vacuum, right? Like, it's hard to compare one to the other.
All right, just a quick reminder. Today's show is brought to you by Built Bar. I don't know how it's possible that you don't know what the deal is with Built Bars yet by now, but let me tell you again, Built Bars are the best tasting protein bar ever made. It's more akin to a candy bar than a protein bar. It does not remind me very much at all of the you know, chocolate-coated piece of sidewalk chalk that I typically buy from the store that masquerades as a protein source for me. Granted, those bars do give you protein, but they're often not very fun to eat. Built bars are completely different. They're nice and soft and chewy on the inside. They're coated with 100% natural chocolate, and all the ingredients are 100% natural, which means that you can eat these and feel pretty good about what you're putting into your body. You're not putting a ton of fillers and junk into your body just to get your protein intake for the day after your workout. On top of that, they have a number of amazing flavors. They have flavors with nuts and without nuts. Some of my favorites with nuts are the banana bread flavor. That's fantastic. All the ones with peanut butter in it, because I'm a big peanut butter guy. And toffee almond I tried recently, which was fantastic. And the nut-free flavors, for those of you with nut allergies, are prepared in a 100% nut-free facility and have some great flavors as well, like mint chocolate, orange cream. Those are fantastic flavors too, and ones that I've really enjoyed eating. So lastly, I think I should also note that for those of you that are really conscious about the calories and protein and that ratio, and whether you're taking in too much sugar with your bar and all that, all Built Bars are 200 calories or less, and sometimes they're more like 100 calories per bar, and all of them have anywhere from 15 to 20 grams of protein per bar, which is a huge amount given the low calories. They also clock in typically at 4 or 3 grams of sugar and less than 5 grams of net carbs per bar. So really good for you, no matter what diet you're on, you know, to get your protein and not have to break the bank, so to speak, with calories and sugar and things of that nature. So if you are interested in getting some Built Bars yourself, go to builtbar.com and use promo code LOCKEDON, and you will get $10 off your first order. You can either get a single flavor box if you want, or you can build your own box and get multiple flavors. That's certainly been my choice when I go to restock my Built Bar collection. And feel free to ask me for flavor recommendations if you want some. So again, use promo code LOCKEDON and get $10 off at BuiltBar.com. That's BuiltBar.com, promo code LOCKEDON for $10 off your first order.
Yeah, no, that's, I think it's absolutely a fair point. And it's, I wonder, I mean, to Alex's point, like, you could question if Budenholzer was ever a real candidate. And it sort of brings me around to Tom Thibodeau and say, I mean, he's clearly the guy in this search with the most gravitas, like even with the new candidates thrown in, like nobody has close to his track record. And it's interesting now that we're hearing all these names. And to your point, Mike, that, I mean, like feasibly, like one of these younger guys could come in and just blow the Knicks away. And I kind of think about that versus the idea that Tibbs, I mean, seemingly from the onset of this search, was so heavily the favorite. This is another one of those hard questions, but is your feel right now that you would pick Tibbs over the rest of the field in terms of likelihood, or between Atkinson, Miller, and maybe a dark horse emerging out of nowhere, you'd say it's more likely than not that Tibbs doesn't end up being the Knicks coach?
I think I would. I mean, I think the indication I've gotten are that Tibbs is the favorite for the job. I don't know how to weigh it. I don't know how to like, I don't know. I don't know how to like, what's the, like put a percentage on it, put odds
handicap
on it.
Yeah.
Yeah. Handicap it. That's a good word. You should be a writer. Have you thought about that?
I've done a little, you know, nowhere like the Athletics. So if you guys are hiring, but yeah, go ahead.
But you should, yeah. I mean, look, I if I have to guess right now, and I hate kind of like handicapping these things, I would guess that it's like Tibbs is, you know, ahead of the field. If we're putting field as kind of like one holistic candidate, that's kind of where I'm at right now. And you know, because I've been thinking about this too, and you guys tell me what you think. And sorry if I'm like kind of hemming and hawing a little bit because I'm trying to collect my thoughts on the way. I don't know if it's necessarily a bad thing to have like a favorite candidate heading into a search, if it's that type of thing, right? If the candidate is the favorite for the right reasons, I guess is the way to put it. If it's not just like someone you land on through capricious means or out of like favoritism or something like that, if it's somebody that you think is actually qualified, it's not bad, I think, to have priors entering into a search. If you're looking at like if any other coaching candidates out there can surpass them, because at least you've kind of got a landmark to set everyone else to. And I think that kind of develops during a search too, I think.
Yeah, yeah, no, go ahead, Alex. I'll go ahead. Yeah, I mean, I agree with that. And actually, I think there's something to be said, you know, as far as the Tibbs being the favorite, you know, sort of the betting favorite going in due to his relationship with Leon Rose and all that. I think there's something to be said. You actually wrote this in your Tibbs coach profile, which to anybody listening, if they haven't read them, they're very neat. You wrote them up sort of like a resume or like a job interview, you know, template kind of thing with references and all that. It was very neat. But one thing that you noted in the Tibbs one was that there would be a nice symbiosis between, you know, Rose and Tibbs right away, given their prior relationship, you know, before he was even interviewed as, you know, coach for the Knicks, they already were close and whatever, and, you know, had ties to one another. I think there's something to be said for that. I mean, that was, for better or worse, Fizdale and Perry and Mills seemed to have that sort of symbiosis where there was like a top down approach to how the team was being run and all that. And I do think that, you know, if you get the right mix, that is valuable, because so often you do see times where, you know, coaches butt heads with front offices and, you know, with how they're playing players, or, you know, what the overall goal is, you know, on the court versus what the front office thinks the goal should be. So I think there's something to be said, you know, for that, in that, you know, there would already be a familiarity there and you wouldn't have to go through this sort of front office to coach learning curve. At least that's, you know, to me, what I think.
I was actually thinking about this with Fizdale, because, you know, they always said they were on the same page throughout the whole time, obviously, until he was fired, which is kind of a big asterisk to the whole thing.
Yeah.
But I do question that, and I kind of question it at the moment. Maybe it was around the, like, fall of 2019 before that season started. And I thought the thing that was interesting and that made me question and whether they were really on the right page, and it makes me think of the Tibbs Leon Rose relationship and how that could potentially work, is you know, the way that Fizdale liked to play, or at least he said he wanted to play, was kind of more up tempo, multi-positionalist basketball, versatile and defense first, right? And then if you look at the roster, the players that he was given, that did not fit the style that he wanted to play. You know, there was not a lot of multi-positionality, as much as Noah Vonleh brought up the ball and shot threes. And that was kind of like a nice thing that worked out for them a little bit. There's not a lot of defense and they didn't play with much pace. And so when you're wondering, like, were they really truly on the same page, you have to look at the talent and the roster that the coach is given and it fits the philosophy that he has. And that makes me think that maybe at some point, even if they thought they were on the right page, like, it wasn't quite there. And so I wonder if like a Thibodeau comes in or an Atkinson or like whoever it is, you know, like the front office and the coach, they have to be aligned. You know, there has to be a mesh there between philosophy and talent acquisition. And like everyone talks about it on the NFL a lot, is like, you know, you got to sign the players and draft the players that fit the coach's scheme. I mean, that fits in the NBA too. Like, you can't just, you know, play three bigs at once if the coach wants to play multi-positional, spaced, up-tempo basketball. And so I think that matters in the NBA too. And I wonder, like, whoever ends up being the coach after this search is like, will the Knicks have that in more than just giving lip service to it, or in have it in actuality instead of thinking they have it. And you know, maybe Tibbs provides an avenue to do that more easily than the other coaching candidates, just because he has known Leon Rose, you know, the longest. I think he's known Leon Rose the longest. Or maybe he doesn't, you know, and I think that's an important thing. And so we'll see what comes of that after the result of the search. But I do think that's going to be something to watch for with whoever they pick.
Just a quick reminder, today's show is brought to you by rockauto.com. One reason to repair and maintain your cars, especially right now when you're trying to limit physical exposure to people, is to save money and limit physical exposure. There's two benefits. And you can then use that money that you save for more important things like the mortgage or food or, you know, that new piece of workout equipment that you need for at home, since you still don't quite feel comfortable going to the gym, even if they do wind up reopening, you know, all these kind of things. There's all kinds of ways that you're looking to save money right now. So why would you choose to spend 30%, 50%, or even 100% more for the exact same auto parts at a chain store or a new car dealership? As a random example, the Delphi FG1456 fuel pump assembly for the 2005 to 2010 Honda Odyssey is $353.99 at Advance Auto Parts versus only $216.79 at rockauto.com. That's a pretty significant price drop. Also, you know, if you shop at rockauto.com, that they're a family business serving auto parts customers online for over 20 years. If you go to rockauto.com and shop for auto and body parts from hundreds of manufacturers, you know that the good people at Rock Auto are going to be looking out for you, the consumer. The other thing, too, is you don't have to go through that awkward situation of walking into the auto parts store. As an amateur, if you're like me, you go on YouTube and get most of your tutorials that way. You don't have to go into the store and go through that whole process of, you know, going up to the counter, asking them for the part that you're looking for, having them ask you a million probing questions that you can't really answer off the top of your head, and then ultimately ordering you a part for probably a lot more than what you could buy it for at rockauto.com from a brand that they're paid to sell you. And, you know, it's just generally a mess and an uncomfortable experience in many cases, unless you're a mechanic that's buddy-buddy with the shop. So if you are interested in a better shopping experience for car parts and a way to save yourself a ton of money on those do-it-yourself car projects that, you know, quite frankly, we all kind of have more time for now, go to rockauto.com right now and see all the parts available for your car or truck. I've been on the website looking at parts for my Subaru Forester, and they have basically everything you could ever imagine, and the prices are indeed dirt cheap. So again, go to rockauto.com, check that out, write "Locked On" in their "How did you hear about us" box so that they know that we sent you. Amazing selection, reliably low prices, all the parts your car will ever need, rockauto.com.
I guess to that point, Mike, I think Tibbs is such a fascinating candidate to discuss in that context, because the overriding feeling, and it makes a lot of sense given his track record, that Tibbs is the quote unquote win now move. If you hire him, you accelerate your timeline a little bit. Obviously you're hoping for lottery luck regardless, but maybe you're drafting a little bit more for a guy who's ready to play right now. And you're a little bit more aggressive in terms of adding vets and free agency, even though it's not a great class. And that part to me seems very, very clear. And obviously, like you would assume, Leon Rose, that would factor heavily in his decision-making. If he wants that accelerated timeline, Tibbs is your guy. If not, maybe you're looking at Kenny Atkinson or Mike Miller. But to your point and what you were just talking about, in terms of style, do you have a great feel for what Tibbs wants to do? Because even in Minnesota, and I think you did a great job highlighting this in your article, that at points it was a lot better than people thought. And I didn't even remember this. Like, I think it was a quote from Tibbs, like sort of tooting his own horn and reciting his resume. But he said something along the lines of the fact that in 2017-18, the Timberwolves ended up having the second best record against Western Conference teams, which I didn't remember, but I thought that was a crazy stat. And that they had gone 66 games in a row without losing two in a row, and he had a similar streak with the Bulls. But that being said, it always sort of felt like rudderless. Like, a lot of times it was like, all right, Jimmy Butler, iso ball on offense, and then Towns and Wiggins can sort of get their turn running things defensively. As you note in the article, they weren't very good for most of his time there, despite that reputation. Obviously, a lot of that was personnel. And it seems like just in recent media appearances, he said all the right things in terms of playing maybe a more modern style of basketball offensively, incorporating analytics, reducing the minutes of guys. But what is Tom Thibodeau in 2020? Because clearly, I mean, the peak of his success was with the Chicago Bulls, and I don't really think you play that way in the NBA anymore. And it feels like a lot of what he brought to the table in terms of innovation defensively, the rest of the league has caught up to and maybe even surpassed.
I think that's a good question. So it's kind of interesting. The way I look at Tibbs' offense is kind of utilitarian rather than like any one philosophy, let's say, which is odd because I think we're seeing now kind of like, you know, you look at Mike D'Antoni, you look at what like Kenny Atkinson did, Mike Budenholzer, you see guys kind of coming in with a system and then restructuring the roster to make it work. I don't know. The read I get on Tibbs, and I listen to his interviews, his podcasts, and what he said at Sloan. And, you know, at Sloan, he was like, what works in the playoffs? You got to have diversity of offense. You got to be able to, you know, hit threes, but also post-ups and all those things. And you look at his track record, I kind of went into it thinking, oh, you know, he's kind of this, Neanderthalic offensive coach, and the offense is really bad, carried by the defense. But, like, he's had a number of good offenses. You know, he finished 10th, 4th, and 15th in offensive rating in Minnesota. You know, he had a top five offense in Chicago his second year there, and the offense weren't horrible the whole time. I don't know how much of what he says is him trying to sound like he'll adopt analytics and him trying to sound he'll be more modern in offense and how much of it he actually believes. I guess we won't really know until we see it. I think the one thing that's been clear about him as an offensive coach, at least throughout his career, is that he doesn't really put a lot of stock into shooting a lot of threes. I don't know if that'll change. I don't know if after visiting all these teams while he's out of the league this past year, like he now sees them in a different light. But, you know, like when he was asked in Sloan and during a whole discussion on shooting threes, he didn't seem to be like coming out as a newfound evangelist for them. So that makes me think like, you know, he'll try to fit the offense to the talent. Like, you know, he didn't really start running a lot of post-up plays until he got to Minnesota. And then, like, Karl Towns, you know, posted the ball up, I think, second most in the league each of three seasons he was there. And Minnesota was, like, top four in the league in post-ups per game. And that was different than what he had done in Chicago. You know, like, he didn't run a lot of post-ups when Derrick Rose was healthy and prime Derrick Rose. And then he shifted to a different kind of offense when he went out. So I think it'll depend on the talent that he has there. And so I don't know how you view that. I don't know if like when you're making a head coaching decision, you want someone who's got a clear cut philosophy and that you can then build a roster around that, or if you want someone who can make the most of whatever it is you have and make that work. But that's kind of what I think he's coming from offensively. I think defense is going to be another significant question. And I don't know how to answer that either at this point, because it's hard to say whether in Minnesota he was kind of the style and the type of defense that he played is no longer as effective as it was when he pioneered it, or, you know, it hurts to have Karl Anthony Towns as the anchor of a defense, and that's why your defensive numbers are bad.
You know, I think that Gavin just alluded to it, and, you know, I've seen a lot of people say things about, like, you know, if you hire Tibbs, you're basically looking to win sooner than later. He's not necessarily going to be a rebuilding coach, blah, blah, blah. But do you think that his development record gets swept under the rug a little bit? Like, I think that people do kind of forget that Jimmy Butler came to him as a, you know, late 20s, first round, or maybe even the 30th overall pick. I don't remember.
Yeah, 30, yeah.
Yeah, he was the number 30, I think. Yeah, and he came to him as the 30th overall pick that he molded into a multiple-time, really perennial all-star now at this point in his career, who really affects winning at a high level on, you know, various teams. And, you know, he took a number one overall pick in Derrick Rose, but he turned him into the youngest MVP of all time. He took Joakim Noah, who was a pretty limited player overall, and turned him into a really well-rounded, MVP candidate player, which is still kind of crazy to think about that, you know, he finished in the, I think it was the top five in MVP voting the one year. Mm-hmm. Also, you know, had Taj Gibson, who the Knicks currently had this year, and we see what type of player Taj Gibson is. Just a workman, you know, everyman NBA player who just goes out there and like does his job and plays defense, rebounds, passes the ball a little bit, you know, does what's required of him. I mean, is there something to be said, you think, for Tibbs's development record, maybe even stacked up to Atkinson, who seems to get a ton of praise in that regard, and certainly more than Tibbs does.
Yeah, I think when you lay it all out there, it sounds pretty impressive, right? I think part of it is just kind of the way that people are stereotyped. You know, Tibbs is stereotyped as this kind of growling, grouchy guy who's always in the video room somewhere watching film until his eyes are bleeding. And it does actually seem like he does watch a lot of film, so that might be accurate. But he does have a pretty good track record. You know, in Minnesota, too, like he helped Karl-Anthony Towns make his first All-Star team. I think he made an All-NBA team, too, when he was there, I want to say. You know, Andrew Wiggins remained Andrew Wiggins, so there's only so much any miracles anyone can work. But it's different than kind of the reputation and the stereotype that got built around Brooklyn when Kenny Atkinson was there, right? And it's all about packaging, too. Which unfortunately does go into how all these coaches are looked at and evaluated. But yeah, I think he's got a pretty good track record. I think that's the difficulty with coaching searches, especially, even when you do have tangible results and even when you do have things you can point to, I think, trying to evaluate a coach is like half kind of like, it is kind of like an iceberg, right? There's so much that you don't know, that you don't see, that it's difficult to make a full evaluation without being inside the organization at the time, which I don't know if that sounds like a bit of a cop-out, but that's kind of like my view on these types of things, is that we can never really truly be able to say, to be 100% confident in how we view like every coach and every coaching candidate.
All right, we are going to cut it off there with Mike. Obviously, he gave you guys a lot to think about. And then tomorrow in a part two, we're going to go through the rest of the coaching candidates. Kenny Atkinson, I sort of get into a lot of the stereotypes about Kenny, or at least the prevailing thoughts on Kenny, that he's elite at player development. He's great at sort of playing a modern style of basketball on both ends of the floor. And then some of the cons, that he's not considered the best in-game coach and that coaching stars might be a little bit of a concern. And I just sort of let Mike tell me what's real and what's not. And then we compare Kenny to Mike Miller. I think that's really, really interesting, because to me, you sort of make a lot of the same arguments for both. Mike does a really good job taking us through his favorite dark horse candidates. And then he's with us on team NBA coming back is really, really dangerous. I know that's not the hottest take in the world, but he has some really good thoughts on the bubble and what it will take to make that safe. Just a reminder, if you missed it earlier in the week, we did a two-parter with Spencer Perlman, a draft writer for the Sepien, who also worked for the Phoenix Suns, helping them with the NBA draft a year ago. He's a genius, like legitimately like one of like the two or three smartest people I've ever heard talk about the NBA draft. Gives some really great, concise, clever insights on just about every top prospect. We really got through a lot with him. So in case you missed that, please check it out. Again, we will be back tomorrow with part two from Mike Workenoff of The Athletic.